M19. Number 2A.
Now, I would like to ask the following question. Which is the general state of the average Christian Science in regard to this kind of consciousness which we have depicted? I think in the average, one can really say that the students are interested foremostly in this atomistic knowledge and culture, the atomistic knowledge of Christian Science. This shows itself like this, that most students feel that in order to get a deeper sense of Christian Science, they would have to read a lot, to read passages, to read here, to read there, or that they study with the concordance, single terms. They may come across certain problems like intelligence or supply or substance or anything like that, and therefore take the concordance and look up what Mrs. Eddy says on these single atomistic terms in order to get the fuller sense of what these terms imply in the light of Christian Science. So one can see it is a fact-finding activity. It's a piling up of data and facts and truths and references and so on. And so this is done with a great sense of fervency and devotion and consecration. We still have to admit to ourselves, if we are honest to ourselves, that this is trying to understand the textbook through this atomistic consciousness, atomistic thinking. And we must therefore admit to ourselves now that this atomistic research is not sufficient. It is not superfluous, because after all, one first has to have facts before one can arrange these facts. So the fact-finding activity is necessary as a preliminary for the structural understanding. The point, therefore, is to be aware that this atomistic approach has its value, but is not the end of all. That we must go further than that. And this naturally is something that one has never quite seen, because as I look in the audience, I feel that most of us have been educated in an age where one still had that thesis from the Greeks that the whole is not bigger than the sum of its parts. See, this is the fundamental statement of the Greeks, that the whole cannot be bigger than the sum of its parts. So we all have been educated in schools, therefore, to gather, accumulate facts, thinking that as we pile up facts upon facts, that we at one point will reach the whole, and then we have it. Now, since that time, the theory of science in the world has naturally seen much more than that. Namely, since the time that in the other fields of science one has realized that the atomistic approach is inadequate, insufficient, and has seen that the structural approach is a higher approach, one has seen that this dogma of the Greeks is wrong. Today, the main point in structuralism, in the structural concept of science, is that the whole is much bigger than the sum of its parts. And I bet you can hardly figure that out, that the whole is much bigger than the sum of its parts. You say to yourself, how is that possible? How come? Huh? Well, if you now remember what we have seen as a definition of science, that it is a fact-arranging activity, and fact-arranging means you have facts and the relationship between facts, you begin to realize, therefore, that this is possible, that the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts, because the whole is what? All the parts plus the relationships. Plus the relationships. Isn't it so? Isn't it so? If you take your body, just put it, give it to a surgeon, and he puts it into parts. Here he plays out your heart, and here your eye, and here your foot, and here your stomach, and here your... Huh? And he can lay out all your organs. It's all there. Is it the body? Does it function? No. It's dead as a dodo. Huh? Yeah. That which makes those parts be a body, which makes those parts be something other than parts, is the relationship that exists between those parts, and that makes up a body. Yes? And so it is in structural understanding. So it is with the textbook. Therefore, just remember those two big things. Huh? The atomistic thinking can only give us the accumulation of parts, whereas the structural thinking can give us that synergy principle. One calls it synergy principle, where one sees that parts related bring out something bigger than the sum total of the parts. So we can see that this is a very natural thing. Actually, since one has realized in the fields of science the necessity of structural understanding, one has found quite a lot of new insights. You see, I can take another example, which is quite important today too. You can take an atom. Well, an atom, say, by itself can be perfect. Well, do we get more perfection by adding atom upon atom? You can't. You can add atom upon atom, but suddenly you come at the point where it becomes a molecule, where it becomes a structure, and a completely different structure. And that adding more atoms and more atoms doesn't make it more perfect. Just as the organs together become a living body, see, there is always a point where relationships have such a structure that something new is brought out, completely new. Suddenly you see that adding more atoms to atoms doesn't do a thing. That which is then suddenly, that you suddenly come to a level where a certain structure is being brought out, that of a molecule. If you put again, start all over again with molecules, and you add molecules on molecules, you can't do that. Once you come to a certain point where it becomes a cell of your body. And you shouldn't add any more molecules to that, or it isn't a good molecule, it isn't a good cell. Huh? Can you see? A new structure is being brought out. And therefore, the atom can no more be compared with a molecule, and the molecule can no more be compared with a cell. And if you build up cell upon cell, you get an organ, an organism. And if you put organism on organism, you get the body. And if you see the relationship of bodies and bodies, you get the family, you get a society, suddenly you get the social, economical system, suddenly you get the whole world. Though one can say, but the whole world, from the physical standpoint, is made up of atoms. This is very, very dangerous. This is what some natural scientists believe, that there is nothing to the whole world but atoms. and therefore they consider a human being just as an accumulation of atoms. Therefore, all the structures of what makes up a body, what makes up a man, his ethics, his spiritual understanding, etc., is just left out. Because that atomistic concept has been the downfall in the sciences and has not brought out really that the relationships are much more necessary to be seen. And so we can see that today we must awake to that demand for structuralism, for structural consciousness, or we do the same bad things as a natural scientist may do if he just considers a human body as a compound of atoms, and that's that, nothing else. You see, that's what is called reductionalism in the science against structuralism that should be considered. We don't like to be considered as a heap of atoms, would you? You wouldn't a bit, huh? You like to see yourself as a structure of many substructures, of perfect structures in the body, perfect structures in business, in family, in the society, etc., etc., all interwoven into one relationship. That's what we would like to see even in the human. And so it is with the textbook. We'll see that, or I can indicate then that just as in this simile of the atom, molecules, cells, and so on, we begin to see that if we investigate the textbook that way, that we find from one step to the other, suddenly in the textbook, a higher structure. If we investigate it further, we suddenly find that these higher structures are substructures of even higher structures. And that these again are substructures of higher structure, until the whole textbook is one big coherent whole. Yes? So that's the aim, and I talk about the structure of the textbook tomorrow. Now, I know that when one is teaching these things, that the human mind always dislikes it. That's quite natural. Begins at once to hit back. And the way it hit back always, and today especially, is that it hits back the way it has been hitting back at Mrs. Ellis' time. Namely, it puts the term intellectualism on this study. And I would like just to take up that term intellectual for a moment, because I feel this has to be seen rightly too. It is actually so, and you could feel it, that this presentation of a structural consciousness appeals naturally to the intellectual faculties of men, and rightly so. But the trouble is that today, in the Christian Science movement, it is a swear word. Whenever you don't like something, and because you don't like to think, one just labels it with, oh, that's intellectual. You know, that's just an intellectual approach. As if intellectual would be something bad, a swear word. So, let's see what Mrs. Eddy is thinking about it. She asked for academics of the right sort, doesn't she, in the textbook? She asked for it. She says that spiritual rationality, well, that was spiritual rationality, as I was explaining to you. It was appealing to your reason, to your logical way of thinking, to a higher way of thinking. That spiritual rationality and free thought. You must be free to think. You must not think the way you were taught. You must not think the way your teacher taught you. We are individuals, we have the right to think, and we have the right to be revolutionaries. Science is revolutionary, and we have to think in a new line, in a new way. We can't think the way we were thinking 100 years ago. Where would we get to in any other field of science and human activity if you would use the methods of 1860? Nowhere would we get. We have to be in advance of the age. So spiritual rationality and free thought accompany approaching science. Science is approaching. We don't have it yet. We don't have to think we have it already. We are doing our best to bear the burden of discovery and try to get nearer and nearer to the facts that Mrs. Eddy has discovered. So that Mrs. Eddy, in the way of using the term intellectual, says that the medicine of mind healing is intellectual and spiritual. That's the point. Christian Science is both. It is intellectual and spiritual. And if we only take one of the two and consider Christian Science only as spiritual and not intellectual, we'll never be spiritual. We'll never find the spiritual sense, the spirit of the letter. Never. And if we feel that Christian Science is only intellectual, we'll never get it anyway. We don't get it either. Because it's both. It's intellectual and spiritual. And Mrs. Eddy says so. Medicine of mind healing is intellectual and spiritual. She says that the churches and the Christian Science periodicals have an intellectual, moral, and spiritual animus. They have all three, an intellectual, a moral, and a spiritual. She says that students with cultured intellect will have a grand career with an intellect. Why shouldn't we culture the intellect too? Besides the spirit. I haven't talked about the spiritual yet. Quite agreed. But let's first take the intellectual. Oh yes, she says that as we drift into more spiritual latitude, who wouldn't like to drift into more spiritual latitude? We all would like it. That this will impart grandeur to the intellectual wrestling. And collision with all time face. Can you see? When we want to get further and advance, Mrs. Eddy says herself, if you want to get into those spiritual attitudes, there will be an intellectual wrestling. We have to wrestle. It doesn't just fall into our lap, you know, because we are too apathetic to think. See, the time for thinkers has come. And therefore, a few wise thinkers, she says, is better than a million of dullards. It depends on those wise thinkers. If we can produce in the Christian Science field pioneers, spiritual pioneers, spearheads that can pierce through the old faith and the old routine of repeating statements and statements and statements all over. This is what is necessary. He says that when an advanced age looks backward on the footsteps of Christian Science, we could see the gain of intellectual momentum. We should be able to see history of Christian Science as an advancement of this with intellectual momentum. Not just show if the number of practitioners have increased or decreased, if the number of churches have increased or decreased, if the attendance in the churches have increased or decreased. We should look back to the idea. Has the idea advanced? No matter if many have seen it and have accepted it or not, because a few wise thinkers is better than a wilderness of dullards. Much better. Because after all, the idea will do the job, not people. So, when therefore we are attacked of being intellectual, just as Mrs. Eddy has been attacked of being intellectual, we have to be aware what that attack is. That attack, Mrs. Eddy calls animal magnetism. Because she says, finally, she says, it is animal magnetism that admits of no intellectual culture and spiritual growth. It's animal magnetism that says we don't want Christian Science to be intellectual. Remember that. Because one likes to fight a progressive idea in Christian Science always with the label of intellectualism. And we should be aware that Mrs. Eddy says, this is animal magnetism. This is not something good. And we shouldn't be afraid, because the intellect that is awakened in us and the intellectual culture has nothing to do with, say, an high education as a PhD and so on. Simple people can have an intellectual culture, perhaps even more easily than the PhD, because the PhD has all those narrow limits which he has learned at, in the university. As a simple man or woman, but with an open mind, can culture his or her intellect very easily. This is nothing difficult. It's just a question of being willing and open to it. And Mrs. Eddy is a wonderful teacher of a science, what science implies. And if you give me about 2 weeks to tell you, I could tell you how. But here I just can promise you that it is so. Yes. All right. Now, I come to a second part. Namely, I have, in this first part, more or less shown you where the problem lies. That the problem is a problem of taking science as a science, and taking science in the highest sense of our age as a structural concept of science and not as an atomistic concept of science, and therefore that we have to culture ourselves into a structured consciousness instead of into a consciousness that is just piling up facts. Okay. Now, I come to a second part, and I want to show you now the history of how this idea has developed. And I like to show you the history of it. I'm a very strong believer in the fact that Christian Science and Christian scientists must have a history, because a history of an idea always shows us the way we have to go and how we can walk in the same way. And I want to show you how this new concept came into being, how it was born, and I want to show you how it came into being in an unpremeditated way. Is that a good expression? Okay. That it wasn't so that someone in the movement or has said, now let's have something else. Let's have something what the others don't have, and now let's build up something. But it came really by night. One couldn't really notice it when it came, and only looking backward and telescoping backward, one could see afterwards what really happened. One could see the spiritual steps that went on. And it is a history that is today now nearly 60 years old. Since 60 years, the first movement of this new idea has taken root, and it was cultured, hidden away from the world, so that the world couldn't destroy it, so that the baby couldn't be destroyed by Herod, that the baby could be taken down to Egypt where it was safe until it was strong enough to come back to Jerusalem. The story that I'm going to tell you is an abbreviated story of that book that Mrs. Peggy Brook has written on John Dolly and the scientific evolution of Christian Science. So there is a more explicit presentation of the subject, and I just take out the main thread to show you the line of development. See, we have seen that Mrs. Eddy left the advancement of the understanding of Christian Science, so to say, to Providence. That she couldn't know how this idea of the signs of spirit would come to birth. She just has the trust that it would have to come to birth, and therefore she had those few prophecies from which we can see that she trusted that the idea will gather its true scientific form. And so I can pick up the thread when Mrs. Eddy left at the time, 1910, at a time when the general form or model of consciousness in the Christian Science movement was more or less just this, that you have to think good thoughts, and that with thinking good thoughts we can heal, and that we have to think right. It was all about good thinking. And at that time, the Christian Scientists believed, and I hear still a lot to believe still today, that good thinking is a Christian Science way of demonstration and of healing. That good thinking has its good effects, and that is Christian Science. Until then, even at Mrs. Eddy's time, we had Kimball who came and just showed another direction and said, look here, it isn't a question of thinking, it's a question of idea. That the divine mind must be understood through its idea, and that it is the idea that does the job. But he wasn't understood. He was too early. And he cracked under the struggle that went on at that time. The movement at large couldn't grasp what he was seeing. But still he had laid the seed and could see that the divine mind must be understood through ideas which expresses it. Then, after Mrs. Eddy, we had that wonderful period of Bicknell Young, who could see that we don't have to deal just with isolated ideas, but that the main point that Mrs. Eddy would bring out of his slant at Christian Science was that there is only one being. And so all his lectures and the classes he taught was on the oneness of being, that there is only one mind, that there is only the one I and the one I am, and there is only one Christ, and therefore it's only one man and one universe, that there are not two different kinds of universes, but one universe. Everything was built on that big point of oneness. Now, during his time that he was teaching this very concept of the oneness of being, at the same time, John Dawley, who was a Christian Science teacher and practitioner, and lecturer and president of the Mother Church for 1 year, he began to see that this is all right to go out from the one being instead of going out from good thinking and some ideas and isolated ideas, that this is all right, but he could see something progressive in it. Namely, he could see that this oneness of being sense could lead very quickly into mysticism. Because mysticism teaches the same thing, the oneness that there is only one being. And there is the point where John Dawley comes in and really gave to Christian Science a completely new direction, namely that there must be a science of this one being.